Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Later on, like a tree that's standing by the water, we will not be moved. New York City Metro Tri-State support for Standing Rock protesters.
Coming up, Antonio Huas, an American oil and energy analyst, author, journalist, and activist who has authored three books, The Bush Agenda, The Tyranny of Oil, and Black Tide, joins us to detail why Trump's win could be a big boost for the controversial Dakota Access Pipeline, which would run through Standing Rock Sioux sacred lands and under their primary water source.
Huas will also elucidate on our long day's journey into night, or the nightmare of Trump's energy policy.
Antonio, first of all, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me.
Antonio, what can you tell us about the reports of hundreds of water protectors injured at the Standing Rock encampments when law enforcement blasted them with water cannons in freezing temperatures?
For the last 8 months now, there have been a series of water protector camps that have emerged on and on the edge of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe Reservation, very close to and at times on top of the pipeline route to try and block the construction of the pipeline, which runs just outside of the reservation and through sacred sites that are sacred to the tribe and would run underneath the Missouri River, the tribe's main water source. I was there on October 27th, which was a big day of confrontation and battle and use of militarized police against the water protectors. At the end of that day, two huge military vehicles were left and then burned, blockading a main artery through North Dakota, Highway 1806. They were left on this bridge as a blockade to keep the protectors away from the pipeline left by police. They've been there ever since October 27th. So last night, about 100 water protectors went to finally remove the burned carcasses now of these trucks that have been blocking this key access road. And they were met by an incredibly, again, militarized police force and for the first time used a water cannon. And this was at night in sub-freezing temperatures. So they were spraying and spraying and spraying. If you watch the video footage, what ended up being several hundred protectors, because people came from the camp to join the others who were there, and they were sprayed with the water. They were also fired at with rubber bullets, also concussion grenades, mace, and tear gas. So the medics released a report saying that hundreds of people were injured through all of those combined tactics, and an enormous amount of pain and anger at the camps where thousands of people are located, and as more and more people are gathering during the holiday week.
Antonio, what's the current status of the construction of the pipeline, and especially the route under the Missouri River, with regard to Obama's stay on the Engineer Corps with regard to construction of the pipeline? What does that look like?
At this point, Dakota Access Pipeline, which is owned by Energy Transfer Partners, reports that about 86% of the entire pipeline route has been built, and that's from the Bakken region of North Dakota, where fracked oil comes out of North Dakota, and it would travel four states to Illinois, where it would then link up with another set of pipelines that would carry the oil to the Gulf Coast, where it is most likely that that oil would then be exported out of the United States. So that portion from the Bakken of North Dakota to Illinois is called the Dakota Access Pipeline, about 86% of which is completely done. And there are certain portions that are still obviously need to be built, and all of it has been granted a permit to be built, except for one section where the Army Corps of Engineers has reversed itself and declined an easement or a permit that it had previously granted to the company, saying that it needed to study the circumstances in greater detail, have better meetings and dialogue with Native American communities and those who are impacted by the pipeline. And that is an easement for the area that would pass under the Missouri River. So that easement has not been granted, and Dakota Access has not been granted permission to build under the Missouri River. Basically, every other area has not only been given an okay, but has been, at least the start of construction has happened The Obama administration also asked many, many times for Dakota Access to voluntarily cease construction in a 20-mile area before and after the Missouri River, for one reason, because the Obama administration was very concerned about the safety of the water protectors and the type of aggressive tactics that have been used against them. But Dakota Access rejected that request and instead has been done construction basically right up to the Missouri River. And there are many different asks that are being made of the Obama administration by the water protectors. But one is that the Obama administration, instead of doing the fast track environmental assessment, which is all that has happened so far for the pipeline, they want a full environmental impact statement conducted, and that all of the real environmental impacts be taken into account, including the potential harm to not only the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe's water, but the Missouri River feeds millions of users downstream. So this is a threat to millions of people's potential water source, and that a full environmental impact statement be conducted, which would take time and would also slow the progress and potentially kill the progress of the pipeline, because it was a similar full environmental impact statement that was part of what led to the end of the Keystone pipeline.
Given your enormous experience with the issues of oil spills, let's do our own environmental impact statement here. I mean, what does one say about the continuation of this fossil fuel delivery system and what it really portends, and what is the essence of the problem? What is flawed in its very inception?
There's many, many problems, one of which I've written about quite a bit, which is the source of where this oil comes from. So this oil is fracked oil from North Dakota. Everyone who has spent any time living near, studying, building, working around the fracking that has taken place in North Dakota for this oil uses one phrase: a wild west. This all literally exploded in production starting in 2008. There has been this massive boom in production in North Dakota as a result of the development of fracking. Money that went into this area, a lot of money that went in for development, virtually with no regulation or with those regulations not being adhered to, which has been a lot of this production comes from Fort Berthold Indian Reservation, so also on a Native American reservation. And there has been mass environmental pollution. There are constant pipelines bursting, spilling, explosions at production sites, deaths at production sites. This production has led the oil and gas industry to become one of the deadliest jobs in America, with North Dakota having a death rate for workers 7 times the national average. And that has to do with how unsafe this type of production and drilling and transport is, not only for the workers involved in it, but of course for the communities around it who have to suffer from these spills and environmental costs and from flaring and from many different problems associated with this type of production, one of which is many, many pipeline spills and fractures. And in fact, one of the pipelines that the Dakota Access Pipeline would link to already goes under a major lake near and under the Fort Berthold Indian Reservation. And one of the people who worked on that pipeline said it was a disaster waiting to happen because of how poorly it had been built. So we have oil coming from a very dangerous and poorly maintained and upheld area. But then we have transport, which transport of Bakken has been problematic no matter how you try and do it. So trains that carry Bakken oil have been prone to derailment and explosions, including the deadliest oil train incident that we know of, which is 56 people killed in Canada when a train carrying Bakken oil derailed and ran into the center of a small town. That just 56 people were killed when it exploded in the center of town. Pipelines leak and burst. And then we have a broader issue of obviously climate and the need to, our best scientists tell us at a minimum that 80% of fossil fuels need to stay in the ground if we're to avert just the worst of climate catastrophe. And then you have Native Americans, some 200 tribes who have come together with a standing sue to say, not here, not now, we don't want this pipeline. And many members, including the chairman of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe, has said, you know, we don't want oil dependency at all, not just not this pipeline, but no more pipeline. So there are a lot of factors contributing to, you know, the reason why there's so much opposition to this pipeline. So a young man, a 15-year-old young man, a Hopi Indian from Arizona, organized a group of Hopi runners to run all the way from Arizona to North Dakota, to the Standing Rock Sioux tribe, and to the Osetee Sakowan camp, which is the closest camp to where this brutal attack happened. And I interviewed him the day that they all arrived at Osetee Sakowan. And he's just 15 years old, and he said, the Hopi, we run as a form of prayer, as a form of resistance. And I saw what happened in the Gulf Coast. I saw the BP oil spill. And when I learned about this pipeline, I said, you know, that can't possibly happen here. That can't possibly happen to my people. So he organized this run, including with a 10-year-old brother and a 19-year-old sister and many, many, many others who literally ran all the way from Arizona to North Dakota. So there's a lot that's led to this really historic resistance.
Antonia, you mentioned a disaster waiting to happen, and you made me think of Donald Trump, who will happen for real in January. What is his likely policy toward these pipelines, and what is his connection to in terms of his business interests and those of his supporters?
This is one of the reasons why it's been so important for calls from pipeline resistors, both to try and stop this pipeline now and to get President Obama to stop it now, because Donald Trump has close personal financial ties to the Dakota Access Pipeline. But he also has made very clear that his intention is to extremely increase production of oil in particular, as well as other fossil fuels across the United States, but in particular to increase oil production from the Bakken region, this very same region. And one of the reasons why, I would argue, is that so many of his advisors are people who are directly financially tied, including himself, to making money off of Bakken production, to making money off of the Dakota Access Pipeline, to making money off of other pipelines and other oil infrastructure. And if you look at the people who he's named to head his transition team and the people who are being named as the likely potential people to hold all of the key offices at Interior, at Energy, at Commerce, at State, it's a who's who of not only the people who put money into Donald Trump's campaign, but also the people who are most likely to financially benefit off of this agenda of a dramatic expansion of production of oil and other fossil fuels from the United States.
Can you name some of the names and give us an idea of some of the investment of those who have been involved with Trump and these various energy, the Dakota Access Project?
Let's start with the direct financial way that Trump would benefit. So Trump has himself personally between $500,000 and $1 million personally invested in Energy Transfer Partners, with a further $500,000 to $1 million holdings in Phillips 66, which has a 25% stake in Dakota Access. Kelsey Warren, who's the CEO of Energy Transfer Partners, donated $103,000 to elect Trump and about $70,000 to the Republican National Committee. One of the people who is most likely to hold a key post in the Trump administration with one of his key energy advisors is Harold Hamm, who is CEO of Continental Resources. Hamm is known as the fracking king. He's one of the largest fracking producers and one of the oldest fracking producers. He's also heavily invested in the Bakken region, and his oil would travel in the Dakota Access Pipeline. One of Trump's advisors, who's also been named an advisor going into the White House, is John Paulson, president and CEO of Paulson & Co., $14 billion hedge fund run by him, also heavily invested in the oil and gas industry, including in the Bakken, in fracking. And one of his investments is Oasis Petroleum, which is building a transmission line, which is part of the Dakota Access Petroleum, part of the pipeline infrastructure that's being built. Yeah, that's just a taste. I could keep going a lot longer. And I cover a lot of this in my Rolling Stone piece from September and my Grist article that came out earlier this month.
Antonia, very briefly, in terms of Trump's appointments to the EPA and the Interior Department, who is that likely to be in terms of Trump?
This is a who's who of nasty oil and coal company executives. So Harold Hamm, like I said, is one. His name is being bounced around for a lot of different positions. Another person to be very worried about is Myron Ebel, who is one of the most famous climate change denialists out there, who's on the EPA transition team. There's also Wilbur Ross, who is a major coal company investor and head of coal companies, plural, who's now very invested in oil and gas, whose name is being bounced around for some of these positions. Also, the governor of Oklahoma, longtime strong advocate of fracking in Oklahoma, added to the bouncing list is Governor Palin. Yeah, I could go on. There's a long list of both people in the head of the transition team and who are being named for positions. I think maybe most worrisome may be the strong position of the Texas Public Policy Institute in many of these various advisory positions and transition team heads, because they have a program and called Fueling Freedom, the whole basis of which is fossil fuels are, and this is a quote, the master resource on which America's power moving into the future will be built. And they name a list of many, many white men who have led this process of fossil fuels being the master resource. There is a book called Fueling Freedom, which two of them have written, and the preeminence of this institute and these authors within the Trump administration is very worrisome for many reasons.
Well, I just finished reading Fueling Freedom, and then after that I got up in the middle of the night 2 days in a row with the, you know, drill baby drill. People need to read Antonia's books. They're really important. I would strongly urge you to look up Antonia Huaz, her last three books, The Bush Agenda, The Tyranny of Oil, and Black Tide. So important. Antonia Huaz, always good to have you with us. She is an oil and energy analyst, author, journalist, and activist, and we're going to have her back again and continue to look at these critical things. They are, after all, our very planet, our very lives. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you both for having me.
Thank you.
In a national coordinated day of action in solidarity with the No Dakota Access Pipeline, called by 350.org, the Global Climate Justice Mobilization Organization, and Indigenous and environmental partners at the request of Honor the Earth, the Indigenous Environmental Network, people from across the tri-state area headed for the district offices of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to demonstrate support with Standing Rock against the Dakota Access Pipeline.
The protesters are part of a broader wave of action targeting decision makers and stakeholders at every level, including banks that are funding the pipeline, politicians, and the mainstream media.
The protesters' message? We demand that Indigenous rights, treaties, sovereignty, and self-determination be honored.
We demand the U.S. Justice Department begin a formal investigation of human rights abuses at Standing Rock.
We demand the protection of water everywhere.
We demand that fossil fuels be kept in the ground.
We demand that the Obama administration and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers immediately and permanently cease construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline and the AIM Pipeline in New York.
The ground is shaking 'cause all the nations have come to say this land is native and we protect the world.
Citizen of the Kuchiching First Nation. She is a Standing Rock spokesperson and the National Campaign's director of Honor the Earth.
Woo! the one of the Native American advisors to Bernie Sanders. So feel the burn. It's awesome to see you guys all here. I was just arrested on Friday. North Dakota dog caged us for 6 hours. They zip-tied us on the side of the road for 2 hours and strip-searched us for misdemeanor charges. It was demeaning and degrading, but we are not demoralized. We're ready to do it again and again until this pipeline is stopped. Have courage in your hearts, because we have to take the streets. Look what happened with this election. Complacency and belief that Obama would save us. We have to take it onto ourselves. We have to stand up for what's right. We have to be strong. We have to say no more. We have to say enough is enough. This is our future. It's our drinking water. This is for us all. We stand with Standing Rock. We stand with Standing Rock.
We stand with Standing Rock.
We stand with Standing Rock.
We stand with Standing Rock.
We will not stop.
We will not stop.
We will not be defeated.
We will not be defeated.
This is more than just one pipeline.
This is more than just one pipeline.
This is all pipelines.
This is all pipelines.
This is our environment.
This is our environment.
This is our land.
This is our land.
These are our children.
These are our children.
These are their children.
These are their children.
We will win.
We will win.
We will win.
We will win.
We believe that 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 we will win.
I'd like to introduce another representative from Standing Rock. Been out there with me and with all of us since August on the front lines, standing up for what's right, making sacrifice to make a difference. From the Blackfeet Nation, y'all's Black Jaws.
I'm from the Blackfeet Nation. I've been in Standing Rock since August, and everybody asks me, what is it like to be out there? This is my second time being away. The first time was for a ceremony, and I was gone for 24 hours. This is my second time, and it's only for another 24 hours. I'm here with you. And so to answer that question, what is it like to be out there? It's hard. It's cold. It's waking up cold. Going to sleep cold. It's not sleeping. It's being sore right now by being pulled out by a police officer out of a car on a public road and feeling nauseous right now because I stayed in that dog kennel for 6 hours and I felt fine right before that. Then I ate the food they gave me. And for the past 72 hours, I've been puking nonstop. I've been there. And I will not stop because I will feel these things and not be afraid. This feeling on the back of my neck from the police officer's knee. The feeling in my stomach that I get from eating their food. From the second time I went to jail. And the feeling that I have of worry because I watched them put my fingerprints in an FBI file. And the feeling that I have right now about my brothers and my sisters that I've been on the front lines with over and over and over and over because they're targeting us. When we go out in the front lines, they look for us and they point us out. And then their bulldogs point their tasers and their beanbags and their mace at us. But all these feelings that I feel right now make me feel not afraid because it's the love I stand on. They have drones over our camp. 24-hour surveillance, bugs in our tents, informants in our meetings. But what brings us forward day and day and day and day, night after night after night after night, after being in handcuffs over and over and over, I know that they will not stop because we are not afraid, because we have all the love from all the prayers that our ancestors have been praying for us for the last 7 generations. And we are standing on the love that we have for the next 7 generations. So do not be afraid. Stand on that love you have. Face Trump. face those officers. Shut down those banks. Shut down these extractive industries. Shut down these CEOs of these corporations of corruption. Because you have love. Love.
Love.
Love.
Love.
Love.
Love.
And when I say black snake, y'all say killers. Black snake.
Killers.
Black snake.
Killers.
Black snake.
Killers.
Woohoo! My name is Crystal Migwans. I represent NYC Stands with Standing Rock. I am here to ask you to become water protectors. We protect each other. We protect the water. We protect our future.
Supporting role. Some of you may choose to help us by risking arrest. Our marshals today are holding these lanterns. When the call is issued, please follow these lanterns. Please remain peaceful.
Please remain peaceful.
Please remain strong.
Gonna face this crisis now. I hear the voice of my great granddaughter saying, shut this pipeline down.
Indeed, stand with our sisters and brothers in the Standing Rock encampment. Shut the Dakota Access Pipeline down. This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.